Wednesday night I did, welcome everybody listening to the podcast. Wednesday night I did a whole review of step four, resentment, in 30 minutes, and I'll have that on the site in probably a week or so. For those who, some people who just listen to the podcast, we do have the site experiencethebigbook.org. We have 304 podcasts and 77 thoughts and tags for anything you want to listen to. Before I start, I'm going to ask God to help me set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, what's best for me, what's best for others. Help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Help me carry the message today. Amen. Steve said a few things. We had a 35-year-old birthday. You know, until I'm completely humble and the absence of pride, I'm not going to start the work. I have to have my pride completely beaten down. And then I think the steps are how we keep our pride beaten down all the time. And you can't be humble and proud at the same time. And that was really powerful stuff, Steve. You've made a big difference in my life. Today, we're on step 11 on the Saturday morning meetings. We're on page, we're covering 84 to 88, and we're on page 86. These pages, I think, whether you're new or a beginner, you should probably read every day. They give suggestions on how to pray and meditate. I don't think you have to be sober long to do prayer and meditation. They're specific. It's powerful the way it's written so simply. Page 84 and 85 are the 10-step instructions, how you live during the day. Clancy said he's recovered, not cured. I say I'm recovered, and somebody asked me, what does recovered mean? And they heard it the other day, and they said, does that mean you don't have to go to meetings anymore? I said, no. I don't know what they meant, because I wasn't here when they wrote the book. But to me, recovered means that I'm not suffering from a hopeless condition of mind and body right now. And that's a gift. And then if I want to keep not suffering from hopeless condition by the body, I have to keep doing it all the time, the steps. And so if you're, and to me, that's such a gift. And remember, it's moment by moment. So if you keep doing the deal, you'll never suffer from a hopeless condition of mind and body ever again. And so that was neat. We did step 10. We covered the daily inventory. We covered the 10-step promises. We covered the warning about letting up on the spiritual program of action, the instruction of what I must do if I want to stay sober, and when I get my willpower back. We talk about lack of willpower, it won't work, right? Lack of power. We had a lot of willpower. And the point they make, and I can't emphasize it enough, and it's true in my life, that my willpower will always work if it's aligned with God's will. And my willpower will still work if it's not aligned with God's will, but it'll get me a wristband and get me miserable and make my life unmanageable. So how we align our power, my power with God's will every day is how is 84 to 88. And then it's fragile. And so step 10, the first paragraph, is how we, when we separate our will, we get it back all the time, moment by moment. And then we talked last week about prayer and meditation. Nobody thought that was funny. Prayer and meditation and how that is so important. We covered the attitude that we need on page 86. And then we did the meditation at night when we retire at night. And I try to do this every night, but of course I'm an alcoholic. I don't always do it perfectly. And especially I try to do it if there's anything bothering me at all. And it tells me what I need to do at night. I need to review my day constructively. Why? It's a form of the fourth and fifth step. It's a fourth and fifth step with God. I'm doing it with God now. I'm there, I'm praying, and I'm looking at constructively how I did my day and where I was resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid. That really sums up my alcoholic personality. And then we have our spiritual checklist. You can list 25 things, but they all come from that. And where was I? so I could see the day when I separated so that I can use that information to do a 6 and 7 at night with God and instructions for 8 and 9, because it says, do I owe an apology? Do I have to make an amends? Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? And if so, suggest maybe you do that. And how do I know if I'm stewing about something? Something's still bothering me. I need somebody to help me see it differently. And because I'll never fix my disturbed mind with a disturbed mind. I just can't see the truth. And was I kind and loving towards all? This is a meditation, because if I'm kind and loving, then I can't be selfish, dishonest, afraid, or resentful. And all, it says all, by the way. Anybody ever done that? Probably hard. But we remember, we're seeking progress, not perfection, but we're trying to look at our personality to try to align it with God's. What could I have done better? Was I thinking of myself most of the time? And I really like these two lines. It's very powerful the way these lines are put together. It says, was I thinking of myself, or was I thinking of what I could do for others? It's a pretty clear choice. And remember, our purpose is to serve God and others, not think of myself. And so I think about myself all the time. I don't think I'm the only one. That's what we do when we're, but we have to stop ourselves and think of God and focus on God all the time. And I think it's a process. That's why it's, that's what the 6 and 7 step is, really. Am I focusing on me, or am I focusing on God? And then, what could I pack into the stream of life? So am I thinking of myself or others, and am I being of service? Self, others, service. And thinking about that, it helps me put in frame what I'm really supposed to be doing, what God's will for me is every day, right? And then it says I must be careful. Notice the word careful, must, not to drift. We drift into worry and fear. Anybody do that? Remorse or morbid reflection, for that would diminish my usefulness to others. Because if I'm in worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, I'm back at self right again. And then I'm not useful to anybody. And then after I do the review, it's powerful. We have a prayer. I ask God's forgiveness. And so I think when I do that, I'm forgiven. I feel it. Because I've humbled myself, and I've admitted my brokenness and how I need God's help. And by asking for God's forgiveness, the next part is so important, follows naturally. I inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So unless I've humbled myself to ask God's forgiveness, I won't hear the corrective measures that need to be taken. And that's the meditation. And I don't know about you, but have you ever woken up in the middle of the night and then you see some solution to something that was bothering you, or some way to change your view of something? I don't know, but that's happened a lot. And that's this intuitive relationship with God. So we covered that. And why do I need corrective measures to be taken so I can stay on the path, so I could be not thinking of myself and thinking of others and serving others, right? And being kind and loving to all. Very powerful paragraph. I don't know how many words it is, but if you do this every night and you do the daily inventory, your life is going to get better. Can't help it. Because it's a form of humility to do the review at night. People don't want to do it. Why? Well, they must think they don't need it, right? So who's telling them they don't need to do it? Well, that's the same mind that told me to get a drink. And so it helps. It's a good thing. It's a good practice. One of the advantages of doing this study 18 trillion times is I probably got that paragraph memorized. I think I do, so I can do it. And just, I don't have to have the book. But I had the book for quite a while. And I know somebody sitting behind me really loves these 84 to 88. And if you start living this, your life is going to change. Now, it says, was that okay to say? You can talk about it when we open up. She's got a powerful story about these pages. It says, now we're going to do when we wake up. Anybody wake up? Now, notice it starts, I don't know if they did it intentionally. I wasn't there. probably should have been, of course, but I wasn't. And that was funny. The night review, at least I've been happy. The night review starts before the morning review. And I think that makes sense because if you notice in the old times, the day started at night, started at sundown. And if you do your nightly review, when you wake up, you have a lot less crap in your head when you wake up. And so it makes sense the way they wrote it. Review at night, and then when you wake up, you don't have a lot of that stuff that you were stewing about the night before. You don't want to carry things over because that'll ruin the day. So in awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. Now, I thought about that today. Practice what you preach, right? I've let my knee get too bad, and I can barely walk, and I have to wait 16 and a half days for the knee replacement, not counting, and it's killing me. And then I have to all this fear about, you know, how bad it's going to be and getting around. I don't know. You understand? It's not, I know it's not pancreas cancer, but still, it's bothering me. And I said, you know, I only have to worry about today. God and I can handle today, and then stay in the day. And then I felt better. I said, you know, I'll do what I need to do today to take care of it. And I have to remember that all the time. Anybody ever worry about tomorrow? Well, you know, there's scripture on that. You got enough stress each day, don't worry about tomorrow, right? Tomorrow will take care of itself. And so it says, here's a powerful line. I consider my plans for the day. Now, what's wrong with that? They're my plans. So they're my plans, and it says before you do that, you ask God to direct your thinking. So it's God's plans, not yours. Does that make sense? And every we all wake up and we think of my plans for the day. I have to stop. So I do this prayer almost regularly before I get out of bed. I don't say it right away because I'm not perfect. Sometimes I'll stew about the day for a little bit. And then I'll say, oh, I got to pray. It says, I consider my plans for the day. Before I begin, this is a powerful prayer. I ask God to direct my thinking. Towards what? I wrote. Directed towards what? Towards God's will. Because remember it said on 85, we must carry a vision of God's will to all of our activities. So this is where I start to focus on that, especially asking, in addition to directing my thinking towards God, especially asking that it be divorced. Anybody know what divorce is? Pretty common in AA. Divorce, separated completely. It's a legal judgment from self-pity. Self-pity is an excessive focus on yourself and your troubles and everything. And dishonest or self-seeking motives. I think that covers it all. What are my motives? What are my motives for the day? And I don't want them to be selfish motives. I want them to be God's motives for me, God's will. It's pretty straightforward. There's a consistent theme in these pages. And I heard somebody say the big book seems complicated, but it's very simple. And it says the same things 1,000 times. Under these conditions, if my motives are good, and God's directing my thinking, then I can employ my mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us brains to use. Now, I didn't realize this, but this is where Joe and Charlie said, you get your brain back. You get your will back on 85. You get your brain back on 86. So if you're sitting in the room, you better do the work to get the 85 and 86 if you want to use your will and your brain again. Because if my brain is working with God's direction and my motives are good, then I can use my mind. Now we're going to study tomorrow night, and there is a solution where it describes how the problem centers in our mind. And everybody says you can't treat a sick mind with a sick mind. And everybody shakes their head. They love it. But what does it really mean? It means my thinking can't fix my spiritual problem. It has to be my thinking related to God and God's will for me. I can't think my way out of this. Knowledge won't work. Self-knowledge won't work. Sandy Beach, I was listening to him, he says, we need to get smart in AA. We need to get smart about everything we're wrong about. And we have to be willing to let go all the time of all the things we're wrong about. And so we need to see that things, our thinking's wrong, our old ideas, so we discard them. Chuck C. said, we uncover, discover, discard all those things that aren't God in our thinking. So I don't know about you, but I find these pages so powerful. It says, God gave us brains to use. Now, you know the story about they're going to sell a brain? Have you heard this? They're going to auction it off at Sotheby's. And they have three brains. And one is a brilliant person who won the Nobel Prize. And then the second one is a brilliant attorney. And they said the brilliant scientist is $1 million. And the brilliant attorney's $2 million. And then they have an alcoholic brain. And they say, this is $100 million. And they say, well, why? It says, because it's never been used. I thought it was funny. I think it's pretty true. Now, here's a key line that they slipped in here. But this line really gives us such an insight into the whole process of recovery. It says, my thought life, not my physical life or my thought life, what I think, which is really the life that causes this problem, right? We have drama. Anybody in AA have drama in their head? Anybody in the room get drama? The drama is my thought life that I've created. And it'll be placed on a much higher plane when my thinking is cleared of wrong motives. What do you think of that line? It's a much higher plane. Now, what's a lower plane? See, the lower plane is when I'm not thinking of God, others, and service, right? And if I'm on a higher plane, serving God, God's will for me, and my thought life will be placed on this higher plane when my thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Now, did anybody ever read pages 60 to 63? Mm-hmm. And pages 60 to 63 describe what a mess we are, right? Our selfish, self-centered personality. And it says that we're an actor trying to run the play, remember? And on 61, it says, if only people would do as I wish, the show would be great. How's that for delusion? Everybody, including myself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. And then it says, in trying to make the arrangements, I might be quite virtuous. I'm being virtuous to get what I want. I may be kind, considerate, patient, and generous to get what I want. See, my motives are self-seeking. And I'm manipulating my behavior and my personality to get that. It says, on the other hand, I may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest, but I'm more likely to have varied traits. And what happens? The show doesn't come off well. Has that ever happened to any of you? I think life doesn't treat me right. So I decide to exert myself more, and then I become still more demanding and gracious. Still the play that suits them. And it says, I may be somewhat at fault. Now, this isn't pretty, isn't it? This is what was my life. He is sure that other people are more to blame. So I become angry, indignant, and self-pitying. So what is my basic trouble? You see, and here's the thing. I was a self-seeker even when trying to be kind. I was seeking for self. My motives were self and not God's and service and others and loving. And it says that's one trouble. The second one is I had a delusion that I could rest, satisfaction, happiness if I managed the whole world. That killed me. And so it ties in. This is what's wrong with us on 60-61. And then the solution is on 86, how we have our day done. Do you see how it's tied together? The big book is always very clear. Once you've studied a lot, it makes so much sense. But when you read it alone, it's very hard to figure this out. It's kind of like reading scripture by myself. I have no idea what they're really saying half the time. It seems good, but then I don't know the context. I don't understand it. It needs to be taught. At least for me, And I think the same thing. And listen, I didn't get this today. I've been doing this for a long time. Listen to everybody I could find teaching me about the book, the steps, workshops. And then the more you read it and do it, the more it comes alive. I don't know if that makes sense. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. Thinking about our day, we're meditating now about our day. Am I going to face indecision? Well, I never used to have indecision before I came here. Did anybody else? I would have to decide right away what to do. And the problem is when I make a decision, I'm reacting. And if I'm not in fit spiritual condition, my reacting wouldn't always be appropriate or good for me or anybody else. And so now we've already talked on page 84 and 85 how we have to be in fit spiritual condition to react differently. And they told me on 85 how I have to stay in fit spiritual condition and what I must carry. And now we're looking at meditating on my day. And when I have indecision, that's a gift, I believe. Because when I have indecision, then I recognize that I don't have all the answers. It's a form of humility that I need help here. And I began to do this more and more through the years. And when I would have something, I would have to make a lot of big decisions at work, complicated things. I wouldn't always know the right answer. I would tell the patients, you know, I really don't know. We have several options here. I want to think about it. I want to pray about it. I want to spend some time. And I'd go home and, you know, I'd kind of tell God, you know, I don't know what the right thought or action is here. There's so many options. And then the next morning it would just come to me on the way to work, what to do. And it wasn't something that I would have thought of right away. And it made a lot of sense. So it does work when I do it. So indecision can be good. And, you know, when you work with a lot of people, they have a lot of things that they're trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, you'll tell them to pray about it, and they look at you like you're crazy. But really, it means that I don't have the answers here. And especially the serenity prayer. Isn't that when you face indecision, you want to say, God, give me the serenity, peace of mind, so I can see what I need to change and what I need to accept. I don't know about you, but I accepted a lot of things I needed to change. And I changed a lot of things I needed to accept. And it was not pretty. And so I don't have to do that anymore. I may not be able to determine which course to take. So here's the prayer. The first prayer is we ask God's forgiveness, inquire corrective measures. The second prayer is we ask God to direct my thinking. And the third is I ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision when I'm going to have indecision. I'm meditating on that. To stop and ask God. And then that ties with page 87 at the bottom, which we're going to cover next week, the pausing when agitated or doubtful and asking for the right thought. You see how it ties together? And so they're telling you how to ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought. That means instinctive without conscious reasoning or a decision. And we're asking God for the inspiration. We're asking God for the intuitive thought and God for the decision. And I had to remember that it doesn't mean that I ask God to help me. It means I'm asking God to provide it. And I need to get out of the way so I can hear it. And that's hard to do. But we have to remember that. I'm not here asking God to be like my assistant to help me get what I think I need. I don't know what I need. I want to get out of the way. And God, show me the answer. Show me the right thought or action. It says we relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. And isn't this part of the third step promise when you've made the decision that God's going to be your director and you're not going to play God? It says you can rest because God's going to provide everything you need if you stay close to him and do his work well. Well, isn't this meditation how you stay close to God all day and you're going to do his work well? And it says, we don't struggle. We often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. Now, I had a lot of wrong answers that I came up with and I acted on. Anybody else do that? And so when you do your fourth step, you can see your whole life of wrong answers to situations, wrong decisions, wrong thinking. So I want right answers. And what used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. So you get your mind back here. And you want to have that part of your mind working, because that's the part where God's directing and not the other part, which is this voice that always tells you what's wrong and what's bothering you and what you need to do and who's bad and who's good and all that crap. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, see, we've just made it by working steps 1 through 9 and then we're in 10. Conscious contact is important with God. It doesn't, there's no other way to say it, but our only problem is conscious separation. Now, conscious means I'm aware that I've separated from God. Now, I wasn't aware of that until I actually worked the steps, but I could see how I separated and created a world in my mind that didn't exist, and I acted on this world and decided what was good and bad in it and all that crap. And I want to have conscious contact with God because then my motives will be good, right? And I'll be loving and tolerant, and I'll be kind and loving to all, and I'll pack what I can in the stream of life. And so isn't step 11, doesn't it say, we saw it through prayer and meditation, to improve my conscious contact with God, asking only for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. That's all I need to ask for. Because if I know God's will for me and he gives me the power to carry out and I do that, my life will be good. It can't be bad. It's guaranteed. It can't be bad. And so I need to improve that all the time. Why? Because my alcoholism's always going on. And the more I improve my conscious contact with God, the more I'll know what his will is for me and the more power I'll have. And so you keep doing it to get, and you feel better the more you do it. It's not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. I like this line. He always gives us realism. We pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions or ideas, especially if you're new. I've heard people come up to me and tell me that they want to do something and they prayed about it. It's God's will. And it's a completely preposterous thing that you know is going to cause them harm. And you can't say anything because they believe that it's God's will. So in the beginning, we're not spiritually fit and we get, you know, we're not as good at this as we can be later. But he says we may have all sorts of absurd actions or ideas, but nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, if we keep doing all this, as time passes, will be more and more the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. And what is the plane of inspiration? It's this voice inside of you that tells you intuitively what's the right thing to do. And it comes from in here, not up here. And then the other reason you know of it is because sometimes you won't want to do this. Your mind will want to do what it wants to do, and it won't want to do this, and then you know this is really what you need to do. And does that make sense? Because I'll say, well, you know, I really should do that. That's God. But, you know, I'm fighting with myself, and when I listen to this, it's wrong, and I have to listen to this. And I didn't have this when I came. I didn't know it existed. So we rely on this, we get the sixth sense, they talk about the sixth sense, we're rocketed into the fourth dimension. This is the fourth dimension where you have this relationship with God, you've got this inside of you to tell you intuitively what you need to do. But if you're blocked from going down here and you're not opening this channel, then you won't get it. Remember the St. Francis prayer says we're a channel of God's peace. I have to open that up with prayer and meditation. I like to meditate and pray that every day. It's so simple, but it's the whole deal. And then I'll practice what? Love, harmony, truth, comforting, understanding, self-forgetting. And that's the whole deal. So spend some time on this, but I think it's really the whole deal. And next week we'll look at the final four paragraphs of these instructions. So. Congratulations again to the birthdays, and thank you. We'll open it up now.
Thank you, Mike.